It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This is Martin Luther King Day. It was so declared back when I was a young girl, and there was resistance to it. But as we look back on Martin Luther King's life, and as we actually read his words, they are so profound. And so I want to share with you at least a portion of his I Have a Dream speech, just to remind you, all of us, regardless of color, what his dream was. This is starting internally, it's not starting at the first, but he says, I say to you today, my friends, So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the Red Hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and sons of former slave owners we'll be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And you know what? Martin Luther King, as far as I know, wrote his own speeches. He didn't have a speechwriter. He didn't have someone trying to angle about how you should sound to this particular crowd. This is what he lived and died believing. And the thing that he says in this that gets lost in this age of racial tensions is that he hopes that the sons, he dreams that the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I don't think Martin Luther King would be happy with the stoking of racial division that we see currently in our country. This is just a great vision that he had, and it remains an inspiration, and it will for years to come. So I wanted to remind you that this is what we talk about. Now, in regard to that, over the weekend, we saw a bit of this. You know, I have seen with my own eyes, and I recognize this as controversial, but this is the truth as I see it. I have seen, I was raised in a county. It was called White. That was the name of the county, White County. So that tells you a lot about my experience growing up. We had maybe three black families, and they worked as custodians, whatever, maids. They did not have a chance in White County to do anything. I saw policemen with the hoses. I saw blacks on the back of the bus. I saw no, black and white drinking fountains. My sister lived in Atlanta for years, and that's why I saw those things, and there is no doubt that there is a stain on our nation's history with the way we treated our fellow citizens, black Americans. There's no question about that. But there is no question also that when you look at the roster of colleges and universities, when you look at the offices of doctors and dentists and attorneys, when you look at the offices in Washington, D.C., when you see corporate leadership, you see more and more, I don't know what the stats are, but I just would say more and more black families rising, achieving, increasing their income. And so I think Dr. Martin Luther King's dream has been partially realized. I'm not saying we're there yet, but boy, are we there compared to what it was? And I always think of Dinesh D'Souza wrote a book. One of the first interviews I ever did with him was probably 15 maybe 18 years ago, when he wrote, What's So Great About America? And he said, What's so great about America is not people talk about slavery, but the fact is that America abolished slavery and has gone about the business systematically of restoring rights and making restitution. That doesn't mean writing checks to impoverished whites in order to enrich blacks as revenge. It means that more and more opportunity, slowly has been given. Prejudice has been denigrated. People don't, if they do hold racial prejudice, they certainly don't boast about it or talk about it publicly. And I think we've gotten to the point where even privately, people, at least certainly the people that I know, don't have those feelings anymore. And they've raised their children to feel differently. So I think Martin Luther King's vision has really, to some extent, been realized. And isn't it something? Isn't it something? And I think it was illustrated Friday at the March for Life. And the March for Life, of course, takes place every year in Washington, D.C. It's one of my favorite events. I was not there this year, to my sorrow. But it is a wonderful event. And I think the organizers are estimating that there may have been around 200,000 people there. Other outlets are saying tens of thousands. But you have to know that ABC, NBC, and CBS's morning news programs ignored the march completely. And those that did report it, reported it with very negative connotations. I'm going to get into some of that in just a second. We know that the organizers are estimating somewhere around 200,000 people. And guess what? They were all colors. People who believe that life is sacred come in all colors. I've seen that in marches, you know, for the sanctity of marriage. I saw tons of people. In fact, I found some of the most passionate people fighting against the legalization of gay marriage were Black and minorities. But I want to talk about Friday's march. And up to the platform stood Katrina Jackson. Katrina Jackson is a representative in the state of Louisiana. But interestingly enough, Katrina is a Democrat. And she stood on that platform, and this is what she said.
Good afternoon. I hear we have, and I've spoken to people from Louisiana. So to all my Louisianians that's joining us, welcome. Louisiana is the number one pro-life state in the nation. And mainly because in Louisiana, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat, Republican, Black, or white, we fight for life. So my Louisianians know this. Anytime you hear me say we fight, you should say for life. So what do? We fight. Regardless if we're Democrat, Republican, Black, white, male, female, we fight. We don't do it for ourselves because someone has already chosen our life. We fight for those who cannot speak for themselves. We fight because it's the right thing to do. And we fight because we know that for everyone who doesn't speak out, their silence means consent. So we speak out and we fight so that we're never silent on the shedding of innocent blood. I tell people in my state when they ask me, why are you a Black female Democrat fighting for life? I say, because I'm a Christian first.
All right, so that was Katrina Jackson. And again, she is from Louisiana, and of course she is Black. And if that isn't the daughters and granddaughters of slaves sitting down at the table with the sons and daughters of slave owners, I don't know what is. And so we unite as Americans. We unite for righteousness, regardless of color. Thank God for Dr. Martin Luther King's vision that he cast. And thank God that at least in part we can see it fulfilled. Now, as to the sanctity of human life, the president he spoke to the crowd, which, you know, I'm telling you, the president, I don't think George W. Bush, he may have sent a video, short video, but not every year. It's been unusual. I'm not even sure. Maybe President Reagan did once, but it has been unusual for presidents to actually speak. Now, I could tell you congressmen line up on the stage a dime a dozen. They love to be seen at that event. They love to take the mantle of pro-life, even though they, for the most part, do nothing about it, including Republicans. When it comes to defunding Planned Parenthood, they're absent. So that's the cynical part. That's the actual truth about what happens there. Nevertheless, some are serious. I remember when Congressman Mike Pence would come regularly. He used to be a good friend of mine, and we would talk, and he was always there, but he meant it. He was pro-life, and so are many. Well, the president, I believe he's pro-life too. And this is what he issued as a proclamation. He said, today marks the 46th year since the United States Supreme Court decided on Roe versus Wade. On this day, National Sanctity of Human Life Sunday, we mourn the lives cut short and the tremendous promise lost as a result of abortion. As a nation, we must resolve to protect innocent human life at every stage. As president, I'm committed to defending the right to life. And then he goes through the things that they have done under his administration. They reinstated the Mexico City policy. They're trying to end late-term abortion. They issued a proposed regulation to implement the Title X prohibition on funding programs that include abortion as a method of family planning. They want to make permanent the Hyde Amendment, which prevents funding bills to go to pay for anything that is smacks of abortion. He says, I will veto any legislation that weakens existing federal protections for human life. He talks about protecting Little Sisters of the Poor and other organizations from being forced to choose between violating their religious beliefs and shutting their doors. He talks about we must do everything within our power to protect the sanctity of life for the most vulnerable and defenseless among us, including people with disabilities. Americans with disabilities like Down syndrome are an inspiration, and their example of joy and perseverance enriches our lives. You probably know that Down syndrome children are pretty much, and I believe in the 90th percentile, aborted in the womb. And so the president says a lot of other things, but I wanted you to hear that because thank God for a president who puts his money where his mouth is and does protect the sanctity of human life. Oh, that we had more people in our government that would do that. Meanwhile, across town, there were other marches. The Women's March, which has been under fire because of its anti-Semitism, but of course, I hate that too, but I also hate the vulgarity, and it was on full display in the Women's March. And so Linda Sarsour, who is the Muslim, she wears a hijab, she's one of the leaders of the Women's March. Even after the Women's March was abandoned by the Democratic National Committee, because of its anti-Semitism, Linda Sarsour stood up and said, we will protect our constitutional right to boycott, divest, and sanctions in this country. Now, that's code for what's called the BDS movement, which is boycott, divestment, and sanctions for Israel. It's only Israel that they're going after. And, of course, she publicly stated her support for that again. So the Women's March, meanwhile, we got the Right for Life. We've got the Women's March, the anti-Semitic Women's March. The vulgar anti-Semitic Women's March. And then we have these kids who came in from Kentucky to march for the right to life. Some of them had their school colors on. Others had Make America Great Again hats on. And this is how they were characterized by ABC News. Let's listen to clip six.
New fallout and confusion this morning after this upsetting incident now going viral. A group of teenagers, some Catholic high school students, seen wearing Make America Great Again hats, appearing to face off with Nathan Phillips, a 65-year-old Native American, as he pounds his drum near the Lincoln Memorial during an Indigenous Peoples March.
All right, I'm going to interrupt. I'm going to interrupt because it goes on, and Nathan Phillips, who says supposedly that, I'm sure he is a Native American elder, claims he was harassed, and he said he was trying to make peace, and the Catholic school back in Kentucky actually threatened to expel the boys that were shown in the video, selected video clips, and many Catholic leaders spoke out against the kids. And it was so the kids now are fighting back. And we find out in the extended video that what Nathan Phillips claimed took place was an absolute lie. There was a group of black Hebrew Israelites, and I heard the tape. They were swearing and calling out these boys, saying terrible things at the Lincoln Memorial. Then here comes Nathan Phillips, who has a history of creating problems. It said that back in 2015, he reportedly claimed he was harassed by college students wearing Native American garb. He's claiming that they were coming at him, and now we know that the opposite was true, that Nathan Phillips went into their personal space banging the drum while people shouted, white people, go back to Europe where you came from. This is not your land. And the boys responded by their school cheers. The video exposes that they did nothing. The schools had to issue an apology, as have many other Catholic leaders. So there you go, the marches over the weekend. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
In Bhutan, where nearly 78% of the population is Buddhist, can the gospel of Jesus Christ make inroads? Hi, I'm Don Shank, director of the Tide Global Radio Ministry, and this is today's Global Update. Bhutan is relatively closed to the gospel and is one of the least evangelized nations. But in 2012, the Tide Ministry began Christian broadcasting in Dzongka, the official language of Bhutan. Please join us in praising God for pastors that are helping to transition curious listeners into committed believers who stand firm in their faith. A pastor who works with the Tide Partner Ministry in Bhutan recently shared this about a new believer. The listener and his wife are Buddhist, but listen to our radio program. Slowly they want to believe in the Lord and are interested in taking baptism. Please uphold them in your prayers. To find out how you can get involved in the Tide radio work and help us share the gospel in Bhutan and around the globe, visit thetide.org. That's thetide.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TME. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TME. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Gladys Knight is facing accusations of being a sellout after she agreed to perform the national anthem at the Super Bowl. The legendary soul singer defended her upcoming performance in a statement, says she wants to give the Star Spangled Banner back its voice. She went on to say she prays the anthem will bring Americans together so we can move forward. The controversy over the national anthem started in 2016 when Colin Kaepernick decided to take a knee. But the disgraced ex-quarterback sparked a nationwide movement that disrespected the military, the flag, and law enforcement. And now Kaepernick's minions are turning their wrath on Gladys Knight. She's even been accused of turning her back on the black community. On the contrary, Gladys Knight is attempting to demonstrate that we are one nation regardless of skin color. She's not a sellout. She's a patriot. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Democrats historically have supported certain barriers, certain other things to protect this country. We will sit with the chief, the president, or whomever, and we'll work through it.
So you wouldn't rule out a wall?
I would not rule out a wall in certain instances. Now, the notion that we can't have barriers is just something that's not true.
I'm not for a wall. I'm not for a wall. I'm not for a wall.
Okay, so she tells us she's not for a wall. Sandy Rios back with you. Talk about intransigence. That's kind of where we are. And so what happened last week, of course, the president, in a pretty dramatic act, 30 minutes before the plane was to depart, while the congressmen, a few of them, Nancy Pelosi and others, Adam Schiff and a few others, were on a bus taking them to Andrews Air Force Base to take a trip to Brussels, to Afghanistan, and I'm sure they said Egypt also. The president issued this statement. Due to the shutdown, I am sorry to inform you that your trip to Brussels, Egypt, and Afghanistan has been postponed. We will reschedule this 7-day excursion when the shutdown is over. And then he says, in light of the 800,000 great American workers not receiving pay, I'm sure you would agree that postponing this public relations event is totally appropriate. I also feel that during this period, it would be better if you were in Washington negotiating with me and joining the strong border security movement to end the shutdown. Obviously, if you would like to make your journey by flying commercial, that would certainly be your prerogative. I look forward to seeing you soon and even more forward to watching our open and dangerous southern border finally receive the attention, funding, and security it desperately deserves. Now, you will recall that just a few days before that, Nancy Pelosi had sent a letter to the president telling him basically that he was not welcome. She had also already issued an invitation to him to speak, deliver the State of the Union address in the House of Representatives. She didn't officially rescind it, but she sort of did. And she said she thinks that he should postpone it. And besides, the Constitution doesn't call for a public speech like that. He could do it in writing, etc. So this is what the president did 2 days later after that. Now, I want to make this clear. I say this often, but I want to say it again. This is not about President Trump's border wall. And this is not about the personalities. Yes, they have big ones and they are in conflict. But this is about you and it's about me. And it's about our children and it's about our country. Just what do we want our elected representatives, our president and our congressmen doing about what's going on at the border? Nothing? Do we really want them to do nothing? By the way, Alex Mallon posted this. Reporters gathered outside the press secretary's office just to ask why President Trump sent the letter. And the answer, we want to keep her in Washington. If she leaves, she guarantees that the second round of paychecks to workers won't go out. So here's Mrs. Pelosi getting on a bus with these others at government expense, tremendous expense. I'm going to talk about that in a second, too. While there isn't enough money because of the shutdown, authorized to pay government workers, 800,000 who are not being paid. And yet Mrs. Pelosi callously, during the first week of the shutdown, she had a long extended vacation in Hawaii, while other congressmen, Democrats, went to Puerto Rico and partied. I don't know how you feel about that, even if you're Democrats or on the left. Surely that might trouble you in some way. And so when Mrs. Pelosi, by the way, was Speaker of the House the first time, you may not recall, but I certainly do, that she rode on an Air Force jet every weekend to go back to San Francisco. She insisted on that. It cost, Judicial Watch tracked that. And this is, yes, it says, it cost the Air Force $2 million. You know what? $2,100,744,000. That's not right. It's got 59 cents on here. So it's $2,100,744.59. Doesn't make sense. Makes 59 cents, I guess. Over 1 2-year period, $101,429 of which was for in-flight expenses, including food and alcohol. That's how Nancy Pelosi traveled last time she was Speaker of the House. Also, Judicial Watch did a study of one of her junkets in 2015, much like the one she was launching this time, and it cost the Air Force a total of $184,587. In that trip, she went to Ukraine, Naples, Italy, Kiev. She took her husband, several members of Congress. They went to Milan, Rome, Vatican Museum, Sistine Chapel, viewing Da Vinci's Last Supper, and on it goes. You see how this is? You see how this goes? This is the way Congress spends your tax dollars, and it's not just Republicans, but it is. We need to call all of them out. So this is what Mrs. Pelosi was getting ready to do. The president stopped her from doing that. So then on Saturday, the president, if you were watching at about 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, this is really interesting because he actually swore in five brand new citizens in the Oval Office. It was a very dramatic ceremony. It's the first time naturalized citizens or citizens had been naturalized in the Oval Office ever. The Homeland Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen administrated the oath, and then the president told each of their stories. And so it was pretty dramatic. And then after that, he proceeded with his speech, which we were anticipating, wondering what he was going to say. So let's listen to a little bit of that. Let's listen to clip four.
Just a short time ago, I had the honor of presiding over the swearing in of five new great American citizens. It was a beautiful ceremony and a moving reminder of our nation's proud history of welcoming legal immigrants from all over the world into our national family. I told them that the beauty and majesty of citizenship is that it draws no distinctions of race or class or faith or gender or background. All Americans, whether first generation or 10th generation, are bound together in love and loyalty, friendship and affection. We are all equal. We are one team and one people proudly saluting one great American flag. We believe in a safe and lawful system of immigration, one that upholds our laws, our traditions, and our most cherished values. Unfortunately, our immigration system has been badly broken for a very long time. Over the decades, many presidents and many lawmakers have come and gone, and no real progress has been made on immigration. We are now living with the consequences, and they are tragic, brought about by decades of political stalemate, partisan gridlock, and national neglect.
Okay, so that's how I started. And then he goes into what he proposes. And of course, let me just say a few things, because I am very grateful for the president trying to solve this problem. And who could argue with the fact that he has put a good faith effort? He stayed in the White House through Christmas, through New Year's by himself, trying to negotiate the Democrats. He's called them to the table. I don't know how many times the last time they actually went. Remember, Nancy Pelosi pretty much flipped out and said, turn the cameras off, turn the cameras off. And it was clear that she was not willing to negotiate with him on anything. And he had asked her behind closed doors if he were to open the government, and they were, which is what the left is demanding, it's what Nancy Pelosi is demanding, and negotiate, would you then give me money for my border wall? And she said no. So that's the kind of negotiation that she's into. So the president deserves a lot of credit for trying everything he can to try to reach some sort of an agreement. Let me tell you what he's proposing as best I can, as concisely as I can. $5.7 billion to fund a steel barrier system, technology roads, $805 million for technology, canines, and personnel to stop the flow of illegal drugs, weapons, and other contraband, $800 million in humanitarian assistance, medical support, new temporary housing, $782 million to hire an additional 2,750 border agents, law enforcement officers, and staff, and $563 million to support our immigration court system, including 75 new immigration judge teams. And then the counter, which is the most controversial. I think those first things I just said are the things that were on the table before that have just been roundly rejected. Many of them are Democratic proposals. The humanitarian aid and other things, because their emphasis seems to be, the Democrats' emphasis seems to be on the plight of the people, the illegal immigrants coming across the border, not on the American people, and the effect of drugs, and the effect of the economy, and the effect of illegal immigrant criminals killing and injuring American citizens. Not so much about that. The focus has been on those trying to come in. And so the president has given them sort of some of the things they had asked for, but still they won't. And so this is the second part. Provisional status granted for 3 years for current DACA recipients. You will recall that 2015, President Obama surprised all of us with an illegal order granting legal status, not permanent, but legal status to young people brought over here illegally by their parents. I think under the age of 16 or something to that effect. And so remember, it was a huge deal. And remember, Mitch McConnell promised as soon as he was reelected, they would rescind that order. And all the others did the same thing, too. And then they did nothing. You might remember that, too. Yeah. So and we're talking about 700,000 or 800,000 people. And we're also talking about with the way it stood with President Obama's proposal, it was going to result in amnesty for really millions of people because of their relatives, their ability to bring people in. The costs were astronomical, and yet it's still in place. So the president wants to give them provisional status for 3 more years. This status will give them access to work permits, Social Security numbers, and protection from deportation. Could I just add, here's the I'll save that. I'll tell you in a second. Provisional status also will be granted to current TPS recipients for 3 years. That's 300,000 immigrants who are getting ready to be deported, and he would allow them to stay for 3 more years. So, and then he ends by saying the country still faces serious immigration issues that need a permanent solution. Once the government is open and the immediate crisis addressed, President Trump will hold weekly bipartisan meetings to reform our immigration system. Here's the problem. Wait, before I even address that, let me give you the overview. Some people think that the president is proposing that because he knows that the Democrats, and certainly sounds like from the soundbite, I don't want a wall, that he might be right, that they will not go for this, and that he's going to then have to file for an emergency order. And that the American people will then support him on that after they have seen how unwilling the Democrats are to do anything to come to the table. And that's possible. It's also possible that the president, this is his opening salvo, and if this is the opening offer, you know it's only going to get worse. That's the danger in this. He's offering something, he's making tremendous concessions already, and they will ask for more concessions. Well, what's wrong with this, you might ask? Isn't that reasonable? It's not granting them amnesty. But you see, in a way, it is granting them amnesty, because with the DACA recipients, they're going to have access to work permits, social security numbers, and protection from deportation. But when they get work permits and social security numbers, that also opens them up to receiving all kinds of benefits that Americans receive. And so think about taking all of that back. Just think about it, and you know it's not going to happen. Plus, we know that when illegal immigrants are rewarded in this way, that means more caravans and more people, tens and hundreds of thousands, why wouldn't they cross over whatever treacherous thing they had to get here for all of those benefits? Why wouldn't you do that? This is an encouragement. It's a shot in the arm to the invasion at the southern border. And so remember that this negotiation is only a small portion of the wall. It's only partial. I forgot how many miles it is, but it's 100 and something miles. And so you can't build the whole wall with $5.7 billion, plus a lot of that money is going to other things. So this is actually already a concession. And the other part of this is that almost every beneficiary of temporary protected status was already here in the United States illegally when they applied for that. So that means allowing them to stay on legally really is amnesty. So this is the problem that many people are having with this. So it remains to be seen. If the president if the Democrats are going to refuse to move, you know that you heard in that clip just a few minutes ago that Congressman Benny Thompson says, you know, he's willing to talk about it. I know that some of those newly elected congressmen, Democrats, are willing to talk about it, I think, because they want to get on to some other things that are there. You know, they want to advance socialism. They want free health care. They want free college. They want to get to all those important things. So I think that they want this thing out of the way, and I think they're frustrated. So there may be some movement, but I don't know. I don't know if Nancy Pelosi really will stick to, no wall. I don't want a wall. I don't know if she'll stick to that or if she will negotiate. I hope she sticks to it, really. And I hope the president issues an emergency order, and I hope the Supreme Court upholds it because of all the background here. But we don't have an assurance of any of that. We don't know how it's going to happen, but that's what's happening with this so far. So you want to know maybe what's happening with the State of the Union address. The president issued kind of a statement to Mrs. Pelosi over the weekend. She said, Nancy, I'm still thinking about the State of the Union speech. There are so many options, including doing it as per your written offer, which you made during the shutdown, and my written acceptance. While a contract is a contract, I'll get back to you soon. Some are suggesting that the president should give it on the border. Others are saying it should take place in the Senate. Ted Cruz says that Nancy Pelosi is terrified of President Trump speaking directly to the American people during the State of the Union. I think he's right about that. I don't think he'll pass that opportunity. I really don't. But I don't know where the president's going to give it. I'm not sure exactly what form it's going to take, but we all watch in anticipation, don't we? I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. After a failed effort to unseat Senator Ted Cruz, Robert Francis O'Rourke has become a regressive darling. O'Rourke demonstrated his commitment to taking America backwards in a recorded conversation reported by The Washington Post, where he openly questioned the current relevance of the U.S. Constitution and whether our nation should still be governed by the same principles that were set down 230-plus years ago. Regressive ideology is steeped in an unyielding effort to fundamentally transform America into something other than America. Whether it's the judiciary, the legislature, the presidency, or the culture at large, the U.S. Constitution is an impediment to be overcome.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Andy Stanley, the son of the great expositor Charles Stanley, says the entire Old Testament is irrelevant for today's Christian. He says, and I quote, "Participants in the New Covenant, that's us, are not required to obey any of the commandments found in the first part of their Bibles." Yikes! Yet Jesus quotes from the Old Testament no less than 84 times and always quotes it as the authoritative Word of God. In his direct spiritual warfare with Satan, he quotes verse after verse verbatim, introducing each quote with, "It is written." Paul in 2 Timothy 3:16 says, "All Scripture," by which he means the entire Old Testament, "has been inspired by God and is as profitable today as when it was first written." In other words, the Old Testament was the Bible of Jesus and Paul. If it was good enough for them, it ought to be good enough for us.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
It gives an impetus to share your faith when you think you've got answers to objections that you expect people to bring up.
The American Family Studios video series, Intro to God's Revelation, featuring Dr. Richard Howe, shows how God has revealed himself in nature and his word, and how we can rightly understand what God has said.
These truths are just a part and parcel of the Christian life. It isn't just for the professional clergy.
Learn the fundamentals of how to approach and understand the Bible in an age of skepticism. This 6-week video curriculum is perfect for your Sunday school class or study group, and it can prepare you to give a defense of God's word and how he speaks to us in nature.
Knowing whether and how God communicates is a safeguard against false claims about God communicating.
Intro to God's Revelation, DVDs and workbook, are available for purchase at afastore.net or call 877-927-4917.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
BuzzFeed News posted a story that says President Trump directed Michael Cohen to lie to Congress. Quote, "President Donald Trump directed his longtime attorney, Michael Cohen, to lie to Congress about negotiations to build a Trump Tower in Moscow, according to two federal law enforcement officials involved in an investigation of the matter. Trump also supported a plan set up by Cohen to visit Russia during the presidential campaign in order to personally meet President Vladimir Putin and jumpstart the tower negotiations. Make it happen, the sources said Trump told Cohen. And even as Trump told the public he had no business deals with Russia, the sources said Trump and his children, Ivanka and Donald Trump Jr., received regular, detailed updates about the real estate development from Cohen, whom they put in charge of the project.
That was the breathless report of MSNBC last week, at the end of the week, as a result of a BuzzFeed article that claimed that two law enforcement officials alleged that President Trump told his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, to lie to Congress about a potential construction project in Moscow. And you heard the rest of it, which would be an impeachable offense, by the way. Very serious. But then, wait a second. Something else happened that has never happened in this whole last 2 years of fake media reporting. Robert Mueller's office actually spoke up and said that the BuzzFeed report was almost entirely incorrect. Not so. And so since that time, BuzzFeed has been taking quite a hit. They're standing by their story, talking about how truthful they are, that they have Both of the reporters on that story, neither of them can cite their sources. They say that neither of them has seen the information, but they claim that they're telling the truth. But even The Intercept, which is a left-wing outlet, published an article called Beyond BuzzFeed, the 10 Worst Most Embarrassing U.S. Media Failures on the Trump-Russia Story, and the BuzzFeed's discredited story is in second place. Also, the New York Times came out criticizing BuzzFeed for this. So what's going on here? I don't know what's going on here, but you will remember. Well, I kind of do. We do know, right? This is what's been happening for the last 2 years, except that nobody seems to have been caught or ridiculed or called out for their misreporting, at least seldom. Sometimes it's kind of a hint of it, but it's like nothing to see here. It goes away within that one-day news cycle, and we don't hear any more about it. But you will recall the BuzzFeed is the outlet that actually published that phony dossier on President Trump in Russia. This is the outlet that received it. And by the way, it was John McCain's associate, one of his aides, who gave that dossier to BuzzFeed in the first place. So this is one big happy family. But nevertheless, Adam Schiff, who is on now, you know, the head of the Intelligence Committee in the House, had this to say over the weekend. Let's listen.
How do you interpret the special counsel's statement that seemed to challenge some of the reporting in BuzzFeed that the president directed his attorney to lie to Congress about some business dealings in Russia?
Well, I assume that this was prompted by the reaction to that BuzzFeed report, but also it may have to do with the special counsel's wanting to be able to use Michael Cohen as a witness in further prosecutions. And wanted to make sure that the public didn't have the perception that he was saying more than he was saying, at least to the special counsel. But, Margaret, I think we need to pay particular attention to what we do know from the special counsel that was not included in the statement yesterday. What we do know from the special counsel is that Michael Cohen has shared information about core matters of the Russian investigation that he learned from people associated with the Trump organization, the business organization. We also know from the special counsel that he has shared information about his communications with people associated with the White House during 2017 and 2018. Now, it was that period during 2017 and 2018 that Michael Cohen was making false statements publicly and to Congress and initially the special counsel about the Trump Tower deal.
And bottom line, Adam Schiff doesn't care that the report has been called inaccurate by the Mueller team. He still wants to investigate, so he's going to be relentless on that. I have other stories I want to update you on. I want to update you on Steve King. This last week, at the end of the week, the Democrats in the House decided not to censure Steve King. They tabled it. Now, there are like logistics in the House that I could explain, but I don't want to. Let's just say that it's kind of pending. It's pending. The censure is pending. And it's been sort of released to Bobby Rush, who issued the order of censure. Bobby Rush, the former Black Panther. Remember the Black Panthers? They killed people. They were terrorists in their day. And Bobby Rush is the former Black Panther. But he's upset that Steve King is allegedly a racist, which you've heard me say, and I will repeat with assurance, that there is not a racist bone in Steve King. I mean, this whole thing is just disgusting to me. The New York Times is the one that started this, with a 48-minute interview of him that they don't have a tape of. And he, my understanding is that he thought he was taping it on his phone. It was after hours, and it did not tape. So I can't go into the weeds of that right now, but let me just say that the censure is hanging, as some would say to me, like the sword of Damocles over Steve King's head. If he says anything, they will bring this to the floor out of the Ethics Committee, and it's sort of hanging over the heads of lots of people. Meanwhile, the Democrats, you know, don't care at all that their new congressman, Tlaib and Omar and Ocasio-Cortez, are anti-Semitic, and that many of their members love Louis Farrakhan, who is rabidly anti-Semitic. They don't care about that. But I'm going to tell you that some people, including myself, are rising to defend Congressman King. In fact, 200 of us, faith leaders, including Dr. Dobson and others, have signed this letter to Kevin McCarthy, who is the leader of the House of Representatives. We are appalled that Republican leadership would choose to believe a liberal news organization famous for their bias over an outstanding member of Congress who has served the people of Iowa and the United States honorably and faithfully for 16 years. If Congressman Steve King believed and stood by the outrageous misquote of the New York Times, then the actions taken against him would have been warranted. But the opposite is true. We call on you to do the right thing as minority leader, issue a public apology, and reinstate Representative King to his committee assignments. And then it has all the signatures. We will put that on our Facebook page. Dick Bott of Bott Radio Network, Andy Schlafly, Phyllis Schlafly's son, Bill Johnson, American Decency, Frank Gaffney, Matt Barber, there's 200 of them, so I can't say them all, but we will put this letter on our Facebook page so that you can see it. And then, of course, the leadership in the House was busy with other things over the weekend. This is amazing to me. Here's the headline from The Hill. McCarthy allies retaliate against Freedom Caucus leader. Speaker Nancy Pelosi isn't the only House leader seeking revenge against colleagues who step out of line. GOP leader Kevin McCarthy is now retaliating against a fellow Republican for voting against him in the speaker vote earlier this month. Multiple GOP sources told The Hill that McCarthy and his allies on the Republican steering committee have booted conservative Representative Jody Heiss, Republican of Georgia, off the Armed Services Committee, making good on a vow to retaliate after the Freedom Caucus member voted for Congressman Jim Jordan for speaker. Removing any member from the committee solely because they voted according to their constituents' wishes is viewed very poorly by the general public and is the kind of punishment politics that the American people hate. That is a quote by Mark Meadows, who is currently the Freedom Caucus chairman. And The Hill goes on to say it's not clear if any of the other Freedom Caucus members faced retaliation, but the fact that Heiss was singled out by the steering committee during a closed-door meeting on Wednesday is significant. He has expressed interest in running to be the next chairman of the Freedom Caucus, the group that helped ouster Speaker John Boehner and blocked McCarthy from succeeding Boehner as speaker. Members are close allies of President Trump, but frequently give their own leadership team fits. That's according to The Hill, which, of course, is not a right-wing publication by any sense. But so Kevin McCarthy has ousted Jody Heiss because he voted for Congressman Jim Jordan for speaker. I mean, it really is amazing. And I think people in Georgia have every reason to just be furious about this. And by the way, sources close to Heiss said that in the hours after the speaker's vote, McCarthy stopped Heiss on the House floor, questioned him about his vote for speaker, and threatened to remove him from the Armed Services Committee. And by the way, you can see it on C-SPAN. There's a video of this at the 209 mark. You can't hear what they're saying, but you can see it taking place. So a nationwide coalition of Americans are now calling on Kevin McCarthy to resign. And this is what it says. Nations in Action, a coalition of Americans advocating for family success through community and policy solutions, is calling on Congressman Kevin McCarthy to resign. With yesterday's removal of Representative Jody Heiss from the House Armed Services Committee, McCarthy has proven once again that, like Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, he is unfit to lead. And it goes on to talk about what Congressman Heiss has done, how he represents in his district so many military people, and he should not be taken off that committee. Can you see how serious these little acts of vengeance are? And how, like, you see Nancy Pelosi spending all of this money of the United States Treasury to travel back and forth in luxury to her home each weekend as speaker, and to put on the government to charge her food and entertainment expenses up to what? I think it was $1 million. Was a lot of money in that Judicial Watch report. How dare she do that? And how dare Kevin McCarthy make these issues of national security his little pet projects for vengeance? But that's where it's gotten to, and that's why we have to stay there, stay the course, and we've got to elect some really, really fine people. I have one other story that I may get into a little bit more tomorrow. But you may or may not have heard that Karen Pence is under attack now. Why is she under attack? Because she wants to teach at an art school, which is in a school, it's an Emmanuel Christian school. It's in the outlying Virginia suburbs outside of the Capitol. It's just a few minutes from the Capitol, Springfield is. It's an Emmanuel Bible Church, which, by the way, I attended for a short time. It's a great church. They have a K through 8 school, and it's here is what the how the Washington Post put it. The school that hired Karen Pence requires applicants to disavow gay marriage, trans identity. You see where this is going, don't you? By the way, Karen Pence, Mike Pence attended that church when he was in Congress, Mike and Karen, and so she taught school there for 12 years when he was a member of Congress, and now she wants to go back to teach. So this is how the Washington Post characterizes it. The school where Vice President Pence's wife Karen has accepted a part-time job teaching art requires potential employees to affirm certain religious beliefs that seek to exclude homosexual and transgender applicants, including that marriage can only be between a man and a woman. Emmanuel Christian School, a private K through 8 school in Springfield, Virginia, outside Washington, sets forth a position in its employment application for teachers and support staff in a section that requires applicants to initial a set of standards that begins with a promise that they are born-again Christians. And then one of the items is live a personal life of moral purity. And it goes on to talk about the sanctity of marriage. It's one man and one woman. That God intended sex to occur only between a man and a woman who are married to each other. Moral misconduct, which violates the bona fide occupational qualifications for employees, include, not limited to, such behaviors as heterosexual activity outside of marriage, homosexual or lesbian sexual activity, polygamy, transgender identity, and other violation of the unique roles of male and female, sexual harassment, use or viewing of pornographic material or websites, sexual abuse or improprieties toward minors. And then it goes on. So you see, this is just pretty typical for Christian organizations and churches, is it not? And schools. So Rebecca Klein of the Huffington Post is the one who found this incriminating passage in this employment document. And she tweeted, she's the one that actually started this. The school where Karen Pence will be working makes potential employees sign a pledge promising they won't participate in homosexual or lesbian sexual activity, polygamy, transgender identity. So let me go to the end here. Jody Winteroff, Senior Vice President for Policy and Political Affairs at the Human Rights Campaign. Human Rights Campaign is the largest, best-funded organization advocating for LGBT rights in the nation. They make multi-millions of dollars, and they're very powerful. I've debated them many, many times. They are the largest force to be reckoned with on that side of the aisle. So Jody Winteroff, Senior Vice President for Policy and Political Affairs at the Human Rights Campaign, questioned Karen Pence's choice of the institution in a statement. The Pences never seem to miss an opportunity to show their public service only extends to some. So whatever that means. And so Family Research Council, Vice President Pence was on with Tony Perkins just last week. And they make the point that this is the clear truth of this. Biblical faith and adherence must be checked at the door of public service, which is a reverse religious test. And those who hold those antiquated views should be relegated to the margins of society. And by the way, someone from the church told me that the school has been receiving all kinds of abuse in terms of phone calls and harassment. And so it's just opened a whole Pandora's box for that Christian school and for Karen Pence. So I'm just saying, this is kind of the state of things. We may spend more time talking about that tomorrow. I actually think we will, among other things. But this is the way the week starts. It was a busy weekend, busy last few days. And we just need to keep our president, our leaders, the Pences, members of Congress. We need to hold them accountable, but keep them in our prayers. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.